Welcome to Torah Imecha Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Liat Meyerfeld, and it's my privilege to be learning Sefer Shemot with you. Our Parsha this week is Parshat Va'era. Everyone loves a good story, full of emotion, suspense, interesting characters, developing storyline. Last week's Parsha ended with Pharaoh's extra decrees and Bnei Israel's frustration that things were worse with their anger pointed at Moshe for causing it. This week's Parsha comes back strong with Hashem's promise that just as he kept his word to the forefathers and took them to the land of Israel, so too he shall keep all of his promises to the people. Hashem confirms that it won't be easy, and he'll even harden Pharaoh's heart, but he gives Moshe signs to show Pharaoh that he, Hashem, is in control. When the Egyptians are not convinced, the plagues begin. We know the story and sort of take it for granted, but imagine it happening in real time. It's not at all expected. All the water turns to blood, frogs everywhere, lice. Wait, who is this God? Wild animals and the death of the animals. Could it be that the Jews are not forsaken? Boils, hail. When things get too hard, Pharaoh promises to let the slaves go if only the plague will end. But as we know, he changes his mind after things calm down. And then the next plague, and again. Whoa, intense. But I have to admit, I haven't been completely honest with you. I skipped an entire section in this summary for the sake of the emotion, suspense, and the storyline. I hope you'll forgive me, since I'm going to go back and focus on Sheni, a section that disrupts the flow, but as we'll see, is crucial to the story. We are on the edge of our seats. Moshe has made an attempt to speak with the Jewish people. No one is impressed, to say the least. And now he's being sent to Paro. He confronts Hashem. The Jewish people didn't listen to me. How is Pharaoh going to listen to me? But before Hashem's eternal promise, the story pauses. Maybe it's necessary so that we can step back, calm down, and regroup. We've all been in situations where that's needed. But here, we don't get to de-stress at the spa. We get to refocus with a short history lesson. For most of us, genealogy isn't our comfort language. So there must be a deeper reason this partial family tree appears here. We're told about the leaders of the tribe of Reuven and the tribe of Shimon and then the tribe of Levi. The leadership of Levi is detailed. Levi has three sons and his grandsons and great-grandsons are also mentioned. The purpose of this roll call is to tell us about Levi and his family, but in order to not embarrass or upset his older brothers and our deep respect for the powers of those two tribes, their lineage is mentioned briefly too. One reason that the actual people are mentioned here is to remind us that they are people. I studied special education at Michala in Yerushalayim, and the teachers made sure that we were careful how we referred to our students with special needs. They were not Down syndrome kids. They were kids with Down syndrome. They were not blind students. They were students who were blind. Students first, and then the disability, which did not define them. In our family, we like to take children on trips that will expand their vision and thinking. And we once went to see and learn about what was an old plantation in the 1800s owned by a wealthy white family and financed by slave labor. The guide specifically did not refer to the workers as slaves. He didn't say the slaves worked for 20 hours a day. He referred to them as enslaved people. The enslaved people lived in crowded quarters. The enslaved people had no access to medical treatment. The language was so cumbersome and strange, but now, in context of this parsha, I realize the importance. They did not choose to be slaves, nor did they define themselves as such, and neither should we. They were people, real people who were enslaved. So too in our parsha. Moshe is frustrated by this nation that cannot focus. They cannot focus because of years of backbreaking work, generations that had barely survived in these difficult circumstances, and a dismal outlook for the future. But that shouldn't define them. Perhaps the Torah stops the storyline to remind Moshe and us that they are not a faceless crowd. They are people, Bnei Israel, Bnei Reuven, and Bnei Shimon, and Bnei Levi. When we see their faces, look into their eyes, and smile at their children, only then can Moshe truly begin to try and help them. Successful leadership develops when we acknowledge the uniqueness of the individual people around us. Rav Steinsaltz explains that up until now, the Torah described the events in Moshe's life that had prepared him for leadership. His birth and upbringing, his stay in Midian, the encounters with Hashem at the burning bush, and again in Egypt. Before we're about to hear about his fulfillment of that mission, the Torah describes to us Moshe's genealogical place in the Jewish people. Many external influences developed Moshe, but the core of his essence was that he was part of a family, a tribe, a nation, Bnei Israel, a great Jewish nation. He was a leader from within the people, not an external outsider. The lineage described is mostly male, and interestingly that many commentators note that this was not to lessen the standing of women in the community, but merely to place Moshe within his family. And indeed, the first woman mentioned is Moshe's mother, Yocheved. The second woman, Aaron married Elisheva, and third, Eleazar, Aaron's son, married a daughter of Petuel. It's unusual for the wives to be named in these genealogies, so we explore to see what the Torah is trying to tell us. Amram and Yocheved are both descendants of Levi, so we're reminded of the great familial standing of Aaron and Moshe, who are, so to speak, doubly Levitical. It's not clear who Petuel or his daughter are, but they appear here as the lineage of Pinchas. Elisheva is given a much fuller yichus. Let's learn about who she was and why she's crucial at this point. Elisheva's yichus, actually, is one to be envied. She would have had a serious shidduch resume. The Gemara in Zevachim 102 reminds us, she's the daughter of Aminadav from the tribe of Yehuda, the tribe of Machot, kingship, and she is the sister of Nachshon, first to jump into the Red Sea, causing it to split. She's married to Aaron, the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, mother of Kohanim, the grandmother of Pinchas, a zealot for Hashem, and she's the sister-in-law of Moshe, the greatest leader of the Jewish people. One can add to this list that it was Bezalel ben Chor, her nephew, who was the architect appointed by Hashem to build the Mishkan. The Torah tells us about the men in her life so that we know what character traits she also embodies. First and foremost, leadership from all angles of her family, and also bravery, spiritual focus, compassion for the Jewish people, intense passion for Hashem and Torah, creativity and humility. But her greatness does not lie with her family tree, nor with the character DNA she has around her and infused with, but rather how she herself utilized all these tools in her life as various events unfold and the role model she was for the Jewish people, a role model that was necessary exactly at this time. Elisheva is a woman who experiences great pride and joy by virtue of her relationship to these male leaders. On the day of the inauguration of the Mishkan, the Talmud tells us, Elisheva had five additional joys over all the other daughters of Israel. But it then goes on to note, she was bereaved of her two sons. I find this extraordinary. The Talmudic text is well aware that Elisheva, like Aaron, is bereaved of two of her adult children in a moment, destroyed when beginning their work as priests and offering strange fire before Hashem. We don't really understand what happened here. Were they drunk, impetuous, inefficient, improperly dressed? But we do understand that they die instantly. The male response to these deaths is described. Moshe speaks to Aaron about Hashem's demands for the priesthood. Mishael and Elzaphan, the sons of Uziel, the uncle of Aaron, are instructed to bring the bodies out of the Mishkan and put them outside the camp. Eleazar and Itamar are instructed about their priestly duties. Aaron is silent. Nothing is said in the Torah about the response of Elisheva, the mother of the dead young men. Aaron is famously silent. We're told this, and it's understood that he is able to accept that the greater good of the priesthood is more important than the individual fates of his two sons. It's hard to imagine having a response such as Aaron's, and perhaps his response is something to aspire to, but in Elisheva's response described in the Midrash, we can more easily relate to her humanity. In the Midrash, Vayikra Rabba 20, we see the situation from the viewpoint of Elisheva. Elisheva, the daughter of Aminadav, it says, did not enjoy happiness in this world. True, she witnessed the five crowns attained by her male relatives in one day, but when her sons entered to offer incest and were burnt, her joy turned to mourning, nefcha simchata le'evel, and she immediately turned ashen, like a pillar of smoke. Miad neset kintimrot ashan. The expression timrot ashan, pillars of smoke, is used to describe complete and continuous devastation. It starts at the point of fire and continues dark and billowing. The Midrash not only allows her mourning, it accepts that the deaths of her sons affected her profoundly, so that even the achievements of her other male relatives would not give her any happiness. Mourning a child, we should never know, is all-consuming. It's not something that one can fully recover from. The best that can happen is that joy can once again be experienced tinged with sadness, with an awareness that life is incomplete and will remain so. Author Nora McErnie, in her TED Talk, described that she would never move on from grief, but could learn to move forward. Elisheva is the woman who brings together monarchy and priesthood. Her descendants will be kings and kohanim. She's the foremother of all leaders who will care for the people, protect them, lead them thoughtfully and in their best interest. She's the mother of all leadership. And Elisheva brings another quality, the awareness of the incompleteness and imperfection that we must live with, together with the deep knowledge that all comes from Hashem. Elisheva needs to have the capacity to hold all of these emotions because she'll pass that down in her spiritual DNA to her children, the leaders. The people will come to her children and they will exhibit all emotions and share both good and bad constantly. Leaders need to have the capacity to empathize with celebrations and challenges and hold people up with a deep faith. Elisheva was a woman of supreme deep faith, despite the suffering she endured. That Elisheva survived this tragedy and surmounted it faithfully, we learn from an esoteric source. The Kabbalists teach that Elisheva's soul was reincarnated as Kimchit, the righteous woman whose modesty and piety were the reason she merited that seven of her sons became high priests. Her ability to create a home of such holiness is tribute to her absolute faith in God. Elisheva, as the Kimchit was, steadfast in the knowledge that all is from Hashem. Elisheva embraces all of her emotions, elevated joy and the depths of sorrow, and throughout it all is able to recognize Hashem's love. In our generation, we're sometimes pushed to a positivity that can be toxic. It denies the pain. Even from a frum perspective, the gamzula tova, thank you Hashem, this momentum, albeit very noble and powerful, can sometimes push people to bypass the process of dealing with the challenges and the growth in emunah that comes with that. We jump to the place of, I'm fine, Baruch Hashem, gamzula tova. We learn from Elisheva not to jump there, not to deny, but to recognize our capacity to hold multiple emotions at any given time, both happiness and pain, both excitement and fear, both love and disappointment. We learn that we can both enjoy life and mourn for what we no longer have or might never have. We must live with the mingling of light and dark, knowing that each will tinge the other, but each must be lived through. We learned that holding a constant sense that we are still connected to Hashem, even in the dark times, even when we may be afraid or sad or angry with Hashem, this will help us through our lives. We learned that only if we grapple with the gamut of emotions involved in all of our experiences will we gain a true, deep acknowledgement of Hashem's oneness and glory. One of Hashem's names is Shalom, peace, coming from the root of Shalem, complete. Recognizing that everything is complete and perfect and comes from Hashem is the end of a process. Learning how to hold immense joy and timrot ashan, pillars of smoke simultaneously. It's hard work, but it brings us to a place of peace. We make peace with our circumstances, peace within ourselves, and with the oneness of Hashem. The Jewish people are about to experience the utter devastation of the Egyptians, the miracles that will be done for them. The excitement to leave Egypt, the fear of retaliation, the joys and the trepidation that freedom will bring. The coming weeks, months, and years will be a roller coaster of emotions. They will learn that Jewish existence is a constant dance of dualities with humiliation and sadness in balance with blessing and joy. Elisheva needs to be part of the picture of leadership because the Jewish people need her to role model emunah. The conflicting feelings that can be embraced type of emunah, the everything that is about to transpire is Hashem type of emunah, the deep all-encompassing love type of emunah, the inner peace emunah. As with all of Torah, this is not just a biblical story or philosophical theory, it is current events. In these almost 100 days since October 7th, we have been challenged. On the one hand, we are overwhelmed in trying to comprehend the loss, to mourn those taken. We are engulfed in Timrot Ashan. We fear for the hostages and for our dear Tzaddikim soldiers fighting every single day. But on the other hand, we move forward. We celebrate life and we celebrate each other. We give and we love and we live. We work towards our dream of Shalom. In Midrash Eshet Chaya, Elisheva is described, strength and majesty are her clothing, oz v'hadar levusha, and she joyfully awaits the last day, Vatischak liyom acharon. As in the redemption from Egypt, so too in all redemptions we are inspired to mirror Elisheva. Multiple levels of emotions experienced with profound faith, developing inner strength as we both struggle and hope for the bright, beautiful future of complete joy. Thank you for learning together.